It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He is Brian Robb from MassLive.com. He is Jay King from The Athletic. I am Sam Jam Packard, and together we are Still Potable! This podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, America's number one sports book and the exclusive wagering partner of CLNS Media Network. The video version of this podcast can be found on the CLNS YouTube channel. Subscribe, turn on your notifications so you can be here with us every time we go live. Audio version obviously available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want more Still Potable, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/stillpotable, where we have podcasts for you Monday through Friday. If you want to hear this version ad-free, or if you just want to be with us as we break down every single Celtics game, every single day of the work week, we will be there for you. Go to patreon.com/stillpotable, and you'll get all of the wonderful content that we are creating. Boys, we are coming together for a classic Potable six-pack. This is where the three of us pick the six most intriguing, most interesting developments that have occurred. Generally, we say since the last week, but, you know, we didn't do a Potable six-pack last week because the Memphis Grizzlies were playing the Celtics on Sunday evening. So I'm opening this up. The last 2 weeks, general themes of the six things that we find the most interesting. Because I won last week, I will choose the draft order. And I'm going to say it's going to go B-Rob, me, then Jay. Then we'll snake it around for round two. Jay, me, B-Rob. Lead us off, B-Rob. What is the most interesting thing from the past couple weeks in Celtics basketball?
I'm going to go with the offensive slippage, if you will.
It stinks. It stinks, God damn it.
Not sure what's going on because they obviously came out.
B-Rob has never picked anything positive, and I love it.
That is not true. That is not true at all.
True.
We'll go back. We'll check the tapes on that.
It's negative.
I'm just trying to balance it out, Jay. Damn it. No, but I do think it's an interesting subplot if we're looking at the last couple weeks here because they came out of the gate and everything meshed, I think, better than anyone would have expected right away, particularly with the starting five. And the numbers there are still quite good. But within the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's been slippage in a lot of areas. I mean, the shooting has kind of gone down across the board. The assist rate, which is what's never been great, has still been down. And they've found other ways to win, to their credit, like against the Hawks on Sunday night. They went on the backs of their offensive rebounding and, you know, forcing turnovers and things along those lines, but they've dropped down to, I think, you know, out of the top five offense on the season. So in my mind, I think this is probably something that's schedule related more than anything else. They've had like a brutal stretch right now. Injuries are starting to pile up here. They've been playing every other day essentially for 3 or 4 weeks. So I think that leads to drop off in a lot of these areas, but I wouldn't expect the defense to be ahead of the offense at this point of the season from a statistical perspective, and it is. And I mean, they're still elite in both areas, but it's fascinating to me that the offense is the area that's maybe a little behind right now.
I'm gonna zag a little bit, whatever's the opposite of what you're doing. This is actually a good thing.
Ooh.
The Celtics are winning. They are winning a ton of games, and they don't know how to play offense together yet. They just don't. Last year, they had a similar start, but it was because everyone was shooting 50% from three. The offense was working perfectly. They knew exactly what they wanted to get at all times. Now it's like Porzingis has missed the last game and a half, but they don't fully know how to incorporate him yet. They don't fully know how to use Jrue Holiday yet. They haven't figured it out as a team. There are other levels that they are going to reach with this group that weren't available to them before. And I think probably the biggest difference when Porzingis is healthy is that now your big man is involved in the actions. Last year, Al Horford was a spacer, right? He was stuck in the corner to shoot his threes, and he shot them really well, but you weren't bringing Al into the action. You weren't running tons of pick and rolls with him. You weren't having pick and pops. You weren't trying to get him the ball in the post. So they're learning all these new things about how to operate, especially with Porzingis. And I think it's just going to take some time. And so I actually think that it's a real positive for the Celtics that while their offense has looked as disjointed as it has at times, they've still been able to win games and their defense has still been great. And they've still had some games where, you know, the shooting looks like it used to, but a lot of the time they're winning without shooting well. And that's huge for this team. They couldn't do it last year. Just could not do it.
I'm going to both zig and zag. They've been, I agree with that. It's good that they're kind of finding other ways to win, relying on defense, kind of figuring things out as they kind of work some new guys into the rotation, into the lineup. But over the last nine games, they haven't just been like a middle of the road offense. They've been one of the worst offenses in the league. I think worse than like Detroit Pistons level of offense. And I just don't know how like much you can turn that into a positive. Like they've come really far back down in terms of just their net rating. And I think it's just like, at least at the start of last year, when they were launching so many threes, it felt like there was like a little bit more ball movement. You mentioned the assist rate, B-Rob. I did think it was funny after the game last night where Jaylen Brown said he was shocked to hear that the assist rate was down, because he thought, in fact, the assist rate was up, because it felt to him like the ball was moving more. But there's still just these portions of just very bad offense where when Tatum's in the game, it's kind of moments where they just don't feel like they're playing through Jason Tatum when they should be. Jay and I talked about on the podcast last night where they did go to Jaylen Brown in moments and they've kind of relied on him to do a little bit more playmaking. And so I think obviously there's going to be some growing pains in that, but I think like there's still, and we've talked about this before, the numbers with Jason Tatum off the court are always going to be bad because compared to him on the court, because he's amazing at basketball. This is the only point I'm going to mention, 12 pounds of muscle, because I couldn't figure out how to make it one of my picks, but 12 pounds of muscle. But like it still is something that you would prefer them not to fall off this badly. And like they still play just a lot of isolation basketball. It doesn't feel like they're getting worse because they're really trying to work the ball around and failing. It just seems like they're the process of doing something other than attacking mismatches. It's pretty much what their entire offense is. And on nights when Jason Tatum doesn't have it, like we saw against the Magic, like I think we saw a bit against the Grizzlies, it really makes them struggle to score points. And I'd like to have them have some sort of formula. I guess they're approaching it and trying to work new guys in, like Jay said, but it still feels like there's a lot of isolation, heavy basketball, low assist games where the process just hasn't looked great.
Is it better to kind of have that approach and maybe to, like, obviously they're posting up more. They're kind of playing in the muck more. And last year it was beautiful. It was free flowing a lot of the time. But when you took that away from them, they didn't know how to react. And so to me, it's like that's what Joe Mazzulla learned last year, is that it's not always about achieving peak efficiency during the regular season. It's, do we have answers when a team takes this away, takes that away? And I feel like they're just developing those answers right now. So I don't know. Certainly, like, there's no excuse for scoring 102 points against the Memphis team that they played. There's no excuse for the way that they handled the Orlando Magic game. But I feel like they're they're kind of playing ugly. And I think there will be a benefit to that down the road of learning how to kind of succeed ugly.
Yeah, it definitely, it's adding an element. I agree with Jay, like that, learning how to win in that way is a crucial part of this year. Cause that's, I think those are a lot of games, especially in the playoffs, that like that's, it's not going to come pretty. And so having, whether it's using the offensive glass, whether it's getting to the line more, whether it's, you know, getting creative defensively to force more turnovers and stuff like that, that leads to easier offense, leads to faster offense. That's good. But in my mind, like the bench is the only bench units with Tatum right now are the only units that show that the cohesion and the chemistry that you want from the passing, the good, like sequencing of like,
but the starting lineup is like plus 30 points per 100 possessions. So you don't think they've shown
not lately. I mean, I'd like to see it in the last, I mean, we haven't seen them together for a while, I guess. So those, I think all those numbers are from probably the first couple weeks of the season. But yeah, I mean, and that might be to their credit. Like maybe it's better to make things simpler for them because they have that easy mismatch. So you like passing with that group less is better because why would you pass more when you have a great mismatch in the post of Porzingis? Like,
but why can't they have both great ball movement and efficiency and then the counter to that when it gets slowed down? It doesn't feel like it necessarily needs to be an either or thing. Like I understand they're trying to like figure out more counters and like what to do and how to play in the muck. But do you have to give up the ball movement and like nice offense? Like it wouldn't be good to kind of get to that and then also be ability like, and maybe that's something they add and like and as they figure out how to play with each other.
I honestly think part of that too is just incorporating Porzingis, and he's going to be such a higher usage guy than Horford ever was last year. And a lot of the way that they created the 2-on-1 advantages last year that led to those sequences of great ball movement was they had Horford in the corner. The defender sagged off him and they turned that into an advantage. And now because you use Porzingis differently, even though he's more of a threat offensively, it's just a different process to get to an advantage. And maybe it's not going to look as pretty all the time. And maybe it's not going to always end up in those same sequences of ball movement. It's just, it's going to look different with Porzingis just because you're going to use him 100% differently than you used Al Horford last year.
I think that's fair.
All right, let's take a break here to hear from our sponsor, FanDuel. Score early this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 moneyline bet. That's $150 if your team wins. So if you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options. You can do spreads, player props, over-unders, and much more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, the official partner of the NFL. Massachusetts 21 and present. Hope is here. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame moneyline wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling helpline, ma.org, or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start, gamesensema.com, or call 1-800-GAM-1234. And now back to the show.
Well, we're back! Pick two of the first round of the Potable six-pack goes to me, where I'm going to select the bench. I feel like it's both been good, but we've seen a lot more of it, which has been bad. I think we've seen Sam Hauser kind of break out of a shooting slump. We've saw Peyton Pritchard play some of his best basketball. We even had some Luke Kornet games. Delano Banton started. Nemias Keita did some things last night. O'Shea Brissett still can't shoot. Lamar Stevens played in the first quarter for some reason. I think like the top end of the bench, like it's good to see Sam Hauser just be brilliant from three. It's good to see Peyton Pritchard kind of emerge. Luke Kornet has done some good things, but, and especially as kind of injuries pile up and guys continue to miss games and Al Horford's continues to sit on back-to-backs, no one has really emerged as that 10th, 11th, or 12th guy to really show anything. And so I think as good as you like kind of feel about Hauser and I guess Pritchard, you just assume injuries are going to continue throughout the season. And the fact that no one has really come in and done anything reliably good, I would say is something to note as of this point, just because at some point, like, there's going to be games where they lose just because they, I know if Chris Tapps continues to be hurt, if Drew misses some more games, and you're just like, you need something from the bench, and no one past those first nine guys has really shown anything. So B-Rob, what do you think of the bench's kind of contribution over the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, the bench, I think, is rounding into form nicely. I get your point, Packer, in terms of, like, the guys, you know, 9 through 15, if you will, like, no one's kind of running away with, like, earning a spot in that group. And there's been some nice contributions here or there. But guys, I thought, you know, I think the favorites for, like, I don't know, Shaper Shedd or Lamar Stevens, you know, I would have bet before the season, like, one of those guys might be the, you know, the energy guy that comes in when they're out a player or two. That is not emerged here. But with that said, like, I think the second unit's play overall and during this last few weeks has been terrific, especially alongside Tatum. Like, those are the lamps, you know, I know, like, Jay and I talked about before the year a little bit, like, you expect those lamps to dominate teams when they're in the game because, you know, Tatum, and has for years because he's the maestro of that, and then you have enough shooting around him to make it work. And now it seems like with Pritchard shot coming around, with Hauser obviously been on fire of late, I think he's been shooting with a lot more confidence, like isn't hesitating at all, which is what he needs to be doing for that. And even, you know, for all of Luke Kornet's struggles at times defensively when he's put into bad spots, like he's also shooting 82% from the field. So, like, I don't, like, all things considered, this is an area that we'll probably look at upgrading, you know, those spots in 9 through 14, 9 through 15 through the end of the year. But I think you've gotten a pretty solid trend right now from the bench. And I think as they get healthier here, that's something that they can build off of and maybe lean into more in certain games when certain guys have it going to kind of take the onus off of the starters' minutes even more.
It's neat how Joe Mazzulla has kind of changed his philosophy about managing the bench a little bit. I think last year he kind of had like a set group of guys that he wanted to go to. Now he's like, let's see what happens if I throw Delano Banton into the starting lineup. Or like, you know, let's throw Kedda in there and see how he looks tonight. And so that's a little bit different than what he's done in the past. And I still think beyond Pritchard, Hauser, and Kornet, and Horford, obviously, but you would love to see like one of the other wings emerge. Can it be Banton? Maybe. I don't know. Can it be Brissett? Can it be Stevens? All of them have such broken jump shots that it's difficult to envision any of them like really creating a ton of separation unless, you know, they start to knock down shots. They turn into super defensive stoppers, which I guess is possible. Like Lamar Stevens started for the Cleveland Cavaliers for a large chunk of the season last year, but like, I just haven't seen a lot from the guys beyond the normal rotation players. And that, like, that's fine. It's not the biggest deal in the playoffs. Your normal rotation guys are going to be the ones handling those minutes anyway. Against Atlanta, they were down Porzingis and Holiday. And I thought like, it didn't really matter that they played a bunch of minutes. It didn't really matter that they had Kornet and Kedda out there for a combined like 25 minutes or whatever it was, because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were very good. And at the end of the day, like if you have four of the starters available, they're going to have a lot of top end talent regardless. So you can have those guys carry the bench. I don't know though. I'm not sure whether they're going to need another player on that bench. It's possible that they do, but also I think Pritchard and Hauser have shown enough like that they've solidified their spot. And Pritchard, like the way he's taking care of the ball goes unnoticed, but he's had one game with more than one turnover since October 30th. Wow. And he's just really doing a good job of handling the ball off the bench, running the offense in a way that we haven't really seen from him before.
Yeah, that's a really that's a really good stat change in terms of like something that's just not noticed with him. Like, I mean, everyone looks at those shooting percentages, but when you're handling the ball and not turning the ball over. That's a very big deal on a team that can be prone to that for some members. But like, I'm not feeling like Lamar Stevens, you guys, I'm just looking at, he's only played 20 minutes total this year. So I feel like other guys have gotten him like at least more of a shot. Like it's, and someone mentioned this in the chat here. Like, do you feel like, I feel like he's due for a game where he just gets like Banton got last night, like get 15, 20 minutes after you see what he can do, like in rhythm here. But I think because everyone
you gotta do something on offense, though.
That's true.
Banton at least is like in their offensive rebounds. We've seen him kind of handle the ball a little bit, can attack the basket. I don't know what Lamar Stevens gives you on the offensive end at all, other than just like, I guess,
hustle. Offensive rebounds, baby.
But does he do it better than O'Shea Brissett does it at this point?
Mid-post fades, baby.
We haven't even seen that.
Yeah, not much
of it. It's clearly not impressing in practice, whatever it is, so, or in the preseason. But
yeah, I do feel like he's due for one of those games where Mizzou's like, you know what, it's Lamar's turn tonight. Let's see what he's got. And maybe while Porzingis is out, that's a chance for them to try that a little bit, to go to a smaller lineup. Because obviously, like, you're going to have plenty of minutes in the front court available with Porzingis out, and I wouldn't hate them throwing out like a pretty small lineup with Stevens at center even, and just seeing what happens. That might be crazy, but it could also be fun.
I mean, new Joey curveballs might be do anything at this point. Your Joey pick, curveballs.
Jay. I'm going to go with Jaylen Brown's playmaking. It hasn't been there all the time, but when it does, when it is there, it's promising. And it's clearly something he's put an emphasis on. It's something the coaching staff is working on with him. They're empowering him to run the offense at times, including when Tatum was out. I thought the end of the third quarter against who the heck did they play? I'm losing. I need
Atlanta
against Atlanta.
There you go.
The lead is cut to six. Tatum gets subbed out. And they asked Jaylen to run the offense, and he makes smart play after smart play to push the lead back up to make that game comfortable. And they not ran away with the win, but they were never in real danger after that. And I just feel like as long as he's willing to get off the ball quickly, and as long as he's continues to try to make the right play, then that's going to pay dividends. It doesn't matter that sometimes he'll throw the ball away, sometimes he'll drive into traffic. He had one play against Atlanta where he drove into the paint and just jumped and like just did something stupid, and that'll happen sometimes. But you can tell that he's not judging himself by his scoring anymore, from the stuff that he said, from the way he's playing, and that's huge. Like, that's a good step for him. And maybe it seems like we're grading him on a curve, but I think he deserves to get graded on a curve here. Like, he's not a great playmaker. He has not been the best decision maker. And for him to show signs of that, and Kristaps Porzingis being next to him, seems to help Jaylen along with that. But I just think, you know, over the long run and in the playoffs, Jaylen being able to diagnose a defense and make the right play is just maybe the most important thing for this team. He and Tatum just have to be better in deep in the playoffs. Like, they need to be great deep in the playoffs. Jaylen wasn't great against Miami at all. The year before that, Tatum wasn't great at all against Golden State, and that's why they lost. And so at the end of the day, like, you need your two best players to be great, and Jaylen learning how to read defenses and doing a better job of that is one of the most important things for this team all season.
Yeah, the buy-in from Jaylen on that front is huge, and the fact that this is an 8-2 green grind to kind of whiff a couple of key new teammates that expect to have the ball in their hands a lot too, and Drew Holiday and Porzingis. So the fact that he's buying into that part of it, and he should, I mean, like, that is, it's obviously a big sacrifice for him, because it's not going to be, you know, you're not going to post the probably the All-NBA numbers or even the All-Star numbers necessarily this year in that type of role, like from a points perspective and, you know, a shot attempts perspective. But to, like, I feel like that's the last thing that defenses around the league will be have to throw at this deep, like at the Celtics, like when playoff comes around, like, hey, can we get Jaylen and Jason to make those mistakes? Like, you've heard of Jaylen the last couple of postseason, like those key spots. And if they are get better at that awareness, finding those outlets, judging when to attack, when to pull back, when to make the pass before you get into too deep into the paint and getting too much trouble there. Like, that is something that is going to be the difference between probably a conference finals run and maybe a banner. So that the fact he's working on that so much this early in the year, I think bodes well in terms of where he could be on that front in April and May.
When Tatum's on the bench, who do you think should be running the offense? Like, what do you think is the ideal kind of system for the Celtics? Say Tatum's on the bench. Last night or against the Hawks, we saw they kind of went to Jaylen Brown and he made a number of good plays, which the great Jay King broke down for the video last night on the Patreon. Everyone should go subscribe. But what do you think the best option is? Because we've seen some moments of just like, okay, Derek White's kind of take over this game, just like kind of going to his right and playing in the pick and roll. We've seen Drew Holiday do some things. I don't know if I necessarily want the ball in Drew Holiday's hands consistently just as a decision maker. But I think if this team is like to reach its like highest potential, highest ceiling, if Jaylen can be a kind of a go-to guy in those moments as a playmaker, just because he is such a dynamic scorer and just his ability to hit tough two-point shots, they're not necessarily the most efficient, but I think in the playoffs, you kind of need guys who can go and create their own shot like that. And just because he is that dangerous, I feel like if he can also add that playmaking part to his game, that solves a lot of their issues of just like when what the offense looks like when Tatum goes to the bench. So I'm curious from, I guess, Jay, your perspective, Jason Tatum heads to the bench. Who do you think should have the ball in their hands at that point?
I would like to see Derek White with the ball in his hands a lot. I would like to see Porzingis with the ball in his hands a lot. And, but you know what? Long-term, and Drew Holiday probably needs more usage. Like, his usage rate has gone just plummeted from when he was in Milwaukee. I don't think it'll be an issue. He's not the type of guy to make it an issue, but there's a stark difference between the way he's being used now and the way he was on the Bucks. Long-term, though, whatever struggles you have right now with Jaylen having the ball in his hands, it's going to pay off. It's going to pay off because that's what you need for him to develop in the end, at the end of the day. Like, can he run your offense when Tatum is sitting? Can he make the right decisions when a team double teams him or sends a ton of help, is super aggressive against him, trying to pick his dribble and all that, like the Miami Heat do to muck it up? Can he handle all of that? And at the end of the day, he needs to be able to handle all of that. So I'm all for Jaylen getting reps and all for the way the coaching staff has empowered him and run the offense through him in those times. I think, you know, it's right for him to want to add that to his game. And if he does, and if he gets good enough at it, then that's the type of development that could really matter. So at the end of the day, you can run more through Derek White. You can run more through Porzingis. You can run more through Drew Holiday. But I think you know what you have there. Whereas for Jaylen, some of this is new, and he just needs work at it.
Yeah, it's, if you're going trust rankings on that front, Jim, I go like Tatum, White, Drew, and pretty big gap in Jaylen. So I think the key to the season now is for Jaylen to kind of close that gap a little bit. And he won't be, obviously, he's never going to be, you know, a true, you know, point guard like Drew, but like at least be someone that you can like have run bench offense for 6 minutes and, you know, and just know, go through the right process. Like, you're not going to be perfect, obviously, but know, like, improve your reads, know what's coming, know who to look for. And then that would just make defending this team just that much tougher, because if Tatum, when they're all in together and Tatum's off the ball, like, you're not going to get a help defender coming off of Tatum. Like, you're not going to get a help defender coming off as much as Porzingis if he's hot. And then things get a lot easier for Jaylen and company to attack.
And I think it's really promising that he believes he's playing some of the best basketball of his life right now. Because that
you think it's his delusions or promising?
No, I'm just saying. It shows the buy-in. It shows that he's not worried about his points per game dipping considerably from last season when he was second team all NBA. When you're that good, when you reach that level, you could easily look at it and think, why do I need to change? What do I need to change after I was literally second team all NBA? They voted me one of the 10 best players in the NBA last year. And instead, he's looking at it like, what else can I do to help the team? And what else can I add to my game that helps us get buckets, not necessarily me? So to me, the way that he's viewing it is really important and shows that he's put faith in the coaching staff and all their teachings, that it's not going to be about points this year for each individual player. Sometimes it's like, can you get off the ball and throw a pass to Derek White on the other side so that he can then find Kristaps Porzingis cutting to the basket or whatever it is. Like, just make the play that helps the next play and helps the offense. And the fact that he's bought into that is big. It is.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Jay, before we get to your next pick, we have to hear from our friends at Factor. This holiday season, you might be looking for healthy, convenient meals to keep you energized on your jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all your holiday to-dos. Listen, the holidays are a busy season. I know I have exams coming up. It just takes all the thinking out of going to the grocery stores. There's no stress over meal prepping. With Factor, you can just choose from 35-plus weekly flavor-packed meals, fresh, never-frozen meals that support your healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences, and they're delivered right to your door and ready to eat within 2 minutes. If you are too busy running around to plan lunch, to do all those things, you have meals ready for you in 2 minutes, and they have a wide menu, a number of different options. And so they also have a lunch to go option, which is perfect if you just don't want to do that much thinking during the day. So if you want meals, healthy meals that are will save you time and keep you stress-free, go to factormeals.com/winning50 and use code winning50 to get 50% off. That's winning50 at factormeals.com/winning50 to get 50% off your order today. Jay, lead off the second round with your second pick.
In-season tournament failure.
Bastard! Bastard! That was going to be my next pick. I'm going to be scrambling for the next
so negative. Minutes. So negative.
In-season tournament failure. They had a chance to do something. They had a chance to make history. They still do. We are recording this on, what is today, Monday? Monday afternoon. The Celtics play the Bulls on Tuesday with the proper winning margin. They still have a chance to put themselves back into contention.
No, because Jason Tatum doesn't like
the inaugural in-season tournament.
Jason Tatum does not care for a point margin. He doesn't care for that at the end of the games. And they need to win by 23.
Yeah, they need to win by a lot of points. They flopped against Orlando. They just played an ugly game. And the Magic's defense is great. The Magic are big. They're physical. They're young. They're hungry. It was just a gross, gross night for the Celtics offense.
It was during the day, and I think the league deserves blame for usurping the in-season tournament by scheduling them on a – there's no reason that game had to be at 2:30. There's absolutely no reason for that. They didn't want the Celtics in the tournament because the league always hates it when one of the big franchises like the Celtics are
scheduled at 2:30?
Dentist appointment. Yes.
That's right. 2:30. All right. That was bad. I'm kind of sad you knew it, though.
It was a fairly obvious joke. But B-Rob, what did you think of the tournament failure?
Yeah, I mean, this was one. I don't know if we go back to our predictions, our preseason predictions of Kraus, but I feel like most of us probably had this in the outcome. Yeah, because it's like they're set for failure here. Like, day after Thanksgiving, long flight to Orlando, pretty brutal stretch. And I don't know. I guess Jason Tatum, out of principle, does not want to, does not like the point tactics at the end of the game.
He doesn't like the tournament at all.
He loves the court.
He loves the court. Yeah. He said he was a fan of the court. The only thing he doesn't like is.
Does he love the court?
He said he did.
He said he did when he was scrambling for something positive to say about the in season tournament. And he was asked after the game.
Don't tell Jalen about the courts.
Don't.
But yeah, like,
I honestly, like, if you're one of the guys at the bottom of the bench, I would be begging Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. We got to win by 23 tomorrow. I need that 500,000. I need it because it doesn't – won't make a ton of difference to Jaylen or Jason, Al or Drew Holiday, Porzingis. Those guys, they make a lot of money. But $500,000 to Svi Mihailuk, $500,000 to Nemius Kedah, $500,000 to Sam Hauser. Like,
well, some of those guys got in the game against Orlando and didn't keep the point margin down whatsoever. Joe Mazzulla said he's going to take the starters out just because he was more concerned about injuries. And those guys didn't really help their own tournament chances. I think it's an interesting experiment for the first year of the tournament where it's like, do teams like the Bucks, the Celtics, the Nuggets, I guess the Suns, I don't know the specific standings. I know the Lakers for some reason went 4-0 in their tournament games, but do teams who are truly trying to contend for a championship and have a championship or bust mentality, is it all like rational to expect them to really care about the tournament? Like, it feels like the tournament's a way cooler idea for a team like the Magic, for a team like the Pacers, maybe the Thunder even, just like trying to establish themselves, kind of get some sort of winning on the board. But for the Celtics, like, I think you could also make the argument that playing in the tournament would be bad for them. Like, they're dealing with some injuries right now. Do they need to go to Vegas and add, I guess, an extra game, more travel to their team? I don't know. Am I just coping because I was really excited about them making the tournament and now I'm disappointed because I had to watch them lose to the Magic? Perhaps. But
they better hope they don't play the Magic in the playoffs.
They better hope they don't play the Magic again this season. Like, the Magic, they just will not beat the Magic. The Magic are a dominant, dominant team against the Boston Celtics.
Mo Wagner would be an all-star if he only played the Boston Celtics. Mo Wagner would be all defensive team if he only played against the Boston Celtics. He's taking charges. He's screaming at people. He's just, I love the Mo Wagner experience. That is an absolute maniac.
Luke Kornet has to watch his back every time he's out there against Wagner. But yeah, it's to your point, Jim, like they are going to go to the West Coast in two more, like whatever, the week before Christmas. So for them to do that with Vegas on top of it, I do think big picture, that actually probably would be better for them given where they are health-wise right now. But certainly they don't give a shit about that. Like they want to win this game. They didn't show up in Orlando. They retired. They played crappy offense and then they let the Magic run it up at the end. But I guess it's kind of a credit to them. I mean, that was their only bad loss of the year from they've played close in every single game through six.
The Hornets was a pretty bad
loss. Well, a bad loss, like by margin, not actually like clearly they've had bad losses, but they've been in every game.
Also, coaching genius, assistant coaching genius.
Yeah, exactly. You can't Friedman. You got to watch out for him.
And their offense was pretty good there. I got so worked up about the tournament that I forgot I needed to pick something. I was going to pick tournament. So great pick by you, Jay. I don't know if it's going to be good enough to win this version, but we'll see next week when I determine the winner. I'm just going to go with injuries. We have Kristaps Porzingis out for seemingly another week or so. It's been kind of unclear when he's going to return. No real sense of when Drew Holiday is going to return. And the Celtics have done, I guess, decently in their absence. But how concerned should the Celtics be? I'm not sure what the exact issue was with Kristaps, but just like it looked, it's like a soft tissue type injury. How concerned should they be with just kind of injuries to their starting lineup? We've already talked about the bench a little bit and how they're good in their roles, but obviously they're not going to, you know, like you don't really want Delano Banton starting many games or Nemias Kedah playing 15 minutes a game, despite all of Portugal being behind him. I just tweeted shout out to Portugal when Nemias Kedah got his first basket. I think I got like 15 retweets and like 500 likes. All of Portugal is locked in to Nemias Kedah. But how concerned should they be about injuries? Is this just like a one-time fluke thing with Kristaps?
Did you just go out of your way to hype up your tweet engagement?
No. I went to hype up Portugal's hyping up of my tweet engagement. It's different.
Okay.
It's the support that Portugal was giving me. Not that I had a great tweet. It was not even a great tweet. I'm just saying Portugal's locked in on this.
They had a lot of engagement.
Yeah, because of Portugal. Shout out to Portugal. They've got great drug laws. Wearing a shirt that says the war on drugs is bullshit, and the Portugals have taken that to heart. Maybe my first pick second pick won't be injuries at all. It'll just be shout out to Portugal.
Okay. Shout out to Portugal.
How concerned should they be about Porzingis and Drew Holiday injuries, B Rob?
Not that concerned. I mean, Porzingis, it was funny when he posted on Instagram that, you know, I think before the Celtics said he was gonna be out for Joe Muzzle said he's gonna be out for a week, like be back soon. Everyone assumed he'd be back. Oh, maybe he's gonna be back for the game.
Yeah, I did not expect a week.
Right. Everyone's like, oh, he's out for a week. But think about this big picture wise, for Porzingis' injury history, a week is nothing. When you consider the other injuries he's had. So yeah, if this is a situation, and honestly, this is coming probably at the perfect time of the year for both those guys to get banged up because the schedule is lightening up. If they don't make the in-season tournament, they're gonna have like a three-game stretch and maybe like or four-game stretch in like 12 or 15 days. It gets really light here around the in-season tournament if they don't make the quarterfinals there. So that's a time to get both those guys, hey, get 100% here. We'll get a look at some of these deeper bench guys. You know, it'll suck against not to have him against the Sixers, but maybe Drew Holiday will be back by that point anyway. And any injury of Porzingis is worth, you know, keep a close eye on, but it seems like this is one where it times out well for them not to hurt them in the standings and not have to rush them back.
Yeah, and there's enough of a hierarchy that when the Celtics are healthy, they're not going to give much time to any of the deep bench guys. Like, man, because you know your top eight is your top eight. You're not going to go much deeper than that, if any deeper than that on most nights. So, yeah, this is a time. Maybe Banton starts to hit a stride. Maybe Lamar Stevens gets a chance and hits some shots and starts to make a push for a role. And those guys can only benefit. And Keta, too. Like, he's a young guy, very little NBA experience. So, any time that he gets during this stretch could be important down the road.
All right, I'll close it out here with the last pick. And I'll kind of not piggyback off of this, but I'll say this here. And you kind of hit on it a little bit earlier.
More Portugal talk?
More Portugal talk. Like let's look at who else has retweeted Jam for Portugal and see how big his presence is there. I'm going Joe Mazzulla minutes management. And I think this is another area, like we talked about how he's had the wild card factor this year. He's made some, I think, important adjustments. I think this is one key area where he's done quite well during the year, because you look down the roster on a night to night basis right now, and the biggest one to me that sticks out, Al Horford, 25 minutes per game. That is probably the perfect number for him right now, because he is someone I think the team had to lean on too much over the course of last year. Part of that was, you know, just not having reliable, healthy bigs behind him. Part of that was probably using him a little bit too much, leaning on him too much to win, to get that one seed in the regular season. But this year now, it's like, okay, if Al's going to have a 15, 20 minute night, that's fine. That's like, that's good. That's take that, bank that. But then you have nights like we saw against the Hawks, like, okay, we need more from Al tonight. And he looks like he's got a lot of energy, a lot of pep in his step, like getting 15 rebounds, the most rebounds he's had in over a year. So I feel like it's that type of game-to-game management is enabling more games like that where Al can kind of step up and give the team a little bit more juice and give them what they need on a particular night. And so I think you look at that down the board, like Porzingis is at 30. Like no one's at a number that's a little alarming. Like Tatum's still a little bit high, but Tatum's
third in the league in minutes per game.
Tatum's third, but I feel like...
Jay King loves talking about Tatum's minutes.
We're talking about alarmingly high. There's only two guys, Tyrese Maxey and Fred VanVleet, who are playing more minutes per game than Jason Tatum.
But that's the guy I'm not worried about. His, like, I'm worried about the guys who's going to wear down in the playoffs more. I feel like Al is atop that list, and everyone else outside of Tatum, like Tatum, I feel like calls his own shots for minutes. And at least with him, with Jaylen Brown, those guys aren't playing. Maybe there was one blowout game where they played way too long in. But compared to this year to last year, like those guys are actually getting pulled when the game's decided. And that's, I think, a welcome change and a good one by Joe.
They were in while the game was like a 30-point game against Toronto, in the game that the Raptors bench then got heated when Joe
had the challenge
with like 3 minutes left or whatever it was. So yeah, I agree he's gotten better at managing this, and I think this is him taking more of a like longer term look at the season. Last year he's talked about he wanted to get the one seed, and when you really look at last year, like there must have been so much urgency on his end. He was an interim head coach. Like, things could have gone wrong. He could have just been stripped of his title, removed from the position. And so he had to have more of a short-term focus, especially early in that season. And so I would guess he's more comfortable now. He certainly has more of a long-term view of things right now. And that's one of the areas for sure that they've shown that.
Okay, speaking of minutes, and I think this is a good place to wrap it up. What do you think Joe Mazzulla's approach is going to be in terms of minutes, in terms of point differential? Say there's about 8 minutes left against the Bulls on Tuesday night, and the Celtics are up 12. And they need to push it to 23 to get that like lead. Does it mean maybe pushing those guys into like playing 36, 37 minutes? Jay, how do you think Joe is going to handle the minutes slash the gunning for points at the end of a game, knowing that DeMar DeRozan's on that court and he does not take too kindly to anyone kind of trying to juice their stats at the end of a game?
I am predicting a fist fight between DeMar DeRozan and Joe Mazzulla.
DeMar DeRozan better watch out because Joe Jitsu is going to take him down.
No. Seriously, though, I would not be surprised if Joe wants to win this thing, and if it's close, like I don't think it'll be egregious where they're up 10 with 5 minutes left and he's got guys in going crazy. But you know, if it's a 21 point game, why would you not try to push it out to 23? Why would you not leave the starters in for another minute or two, just try to win the in-season tournament? Obviously it doesn't mean everything to the Celtics. It's not the most prestigious tournament at this stage. It's such a young tournament that its name is still the in-season tournament, which is insane to me.
It's going to be like the Netflix.
You couldn't think of it. You couldn't just name it after somebody. Like,
no, it sell the naming rights then. So because next year it's going to be the Netflix Cup or the Amazon Cup. It's all about like having something to sell.
The in-season tournament, sick. But. Yeah, I think if it's close, he probably pushes for it, but I don't think it'll be like too egregious. It would be funny though if they're like fouling while up 22 at the end of the game, and DeMar DeRozan is cussing out guys on the Celtics sideline. Jason Tatum is super disappointed because he hates point kind of being like, is it integrity in the game type of guy, I guess. So I don't know, but DeMar DeRozan being involved in multiple like honor of the game type arguments is just fantastic. I love that's his lane.
Well, I mean, DeRozan's got bigger problems. DeRozan's gonna be fighting his own teammates based on how the Bulls are playing right now. So if they're a team that like is ripe for they could either come out like ride the troops and you know go for a win, or they could easily fall behind by 40 in this game for the Bulls based on how they've been playing lately. But I'm gonna take it. If I'm Joe Mazzulla in this game and they're up by 12, 8 minutes left, I go to my deep bench and say, hey guys, you guys want $500,000? Here you go. Go on the floor, run this score up.
I like that.
Get a 10-0 run. Like, listen, you're not going to lean on Tatum. You're not going to lean on Jalen to do this for you. You guys want this money. Go get it. Go get it.
And you know, Pritchard would be sitting there like, I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for this. I've wanted this attitude.
Peyton Pritchard is the key to the Celtics winning by 23 points. They just need to give him the ball 6 minutes left in the game and just be like, Peyton, go off, do whatever you can. Because it doesn't seem like Jason Tatum, from his answer after the Hawks game, was like going to be willing to be launching threes.
That's a good point. Yeah, he doesn't want to do that.
So maybe if you actually want to get that point differential, he's kind of
a big shoot threes in garbage time type guy.
Maybe he's not as much as Jason.
Not garbage time per se, but when they're up like 15, he tends to shoot more threes.
You need Hauser, you need Pritchard, and you just need them to just chuck in threes for the final 6 minutes of the game, full court press the entire time. I think that'd be entertaining as hell. But if I'm actually making a prediction, I think the Celtics win by like 13 points. And then Joe just like doesn't really go for it because he has much bigger goals than the in-season tournament.
Agreed. The coaches don't get money, do they?
They do.
The coaches do.
They get incentive.
All the assistant coaches get $500,000.
I think
not $500,000, they get some large sum of money.
That was negotiated before the year. Like the coaches said, hey, you know,
I'm playing those guys forever. Give me that bonus, man. If I'm like Charles Lee sitting on the sideline, if I'm Phil Pressey sitting on the sideline, I'm pushing Joe to
maybe we should get Derek White back in the game. Let's push Horford, 40 minutes tonight. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. That is going to do it for us. Thank you to FanDuel for sponsoring us. Thank you to everyone who participated in the chat. If you want to hear more Still Potable, we are here for you every single day, Monday through Friday. Go to patreon.com/stillpotable. And you can subscribe and get all of our content. You can come in as a kid for $5 a month and get 2 additional episodes a week, or come in as a god and get for $10 a month and get every single episode that week. Or if you want to be a legend and for $25 a month, you can be with us for every single podcast. We'll send you the link. You can appear on the show. Honestly, if you wanted to, you could just become a fourth member of the show. We're giving you that amount of access. You could give a take on every single episode.
Let's not promise
things. Hey, if they're a legend, they have access to that. That's what we get from the legend tier. But if you enjoy the show, we're really trying to create something cool over there. That's Still Potable Patreon, a big community where there's a live chat that's very active during the games, comments on all of the posts. So we're trying to create something cool over there. So if you enjoy what you heard today on the free pod, please go to patreon.com/stillpotable and subscribe. Thanks to everyone who participated in the chat today. Thanks to CLNS. Thanks to Amit for producing. And we will catch you next week here on Still Potable!